So do you feel we're prepared in the event of a surge to be able to stand up that congregate care pretty quickly in order to meet the state's requirement?
I think so. In the sense that we, you know, within our capacity, and then our backup plan would be, Clallam and Jefferson have fairly large facilities that at the current time are empty. But I think that would be a hard sell for people from Jefferson County to want to go to a neighboring county. And it's certainly our goal that we would manage if we were having a surge that exceeded our current capacity, that would mean we would really have to backtrack in terms of these community mitigation things. It would mean that our plan what our current plan in the state, we've been in what's called mitigation mode, which is a very blunt tool where people shelter at home and we close businesses. What we're trying to move to is suppression mode, where we keep case activities very low by aggressive testing and quick response and isolation and quarantine. If that plan works as we intend it to, we won't exceed our capacity. But if we got a very large, unexpected surge, we could. 32 rooms could be exceeded from when you combine both isolation and quarantine.
Yes, I assume that all the testing that we're talking about, just to make sure that people who are listening on the radio, these are tests for infection, looking for the virus. These are not antibody tests. Number one, I just want to make sure that Mike and Tom are talking about that. And the second question is, are we considering or is antibody testing on the horizon at all for here in Jefferson County?
Well, we certainly are talking about the so-called antigen tests, so the test for the virus itself. The antibody testing is available through the University of Washington lab and appears to be of high quality. Its usefulness is really limited right now. Its greatest use is to do these population studies of communities that have had high outbreak activity. And that's something that's being done here in Washington State, but it's an expensive process getting, you know, hundreds or thousands of tests just to see what the level is in the community. We'll have limited use for it for certain kind of case investigations. If we investigate a case, but it's too late to do the antigen test, sometimes we'll use the antibody test in conjunction with other information to try to determine what happened. And then eventually, people will use it as a test of immunity. But we still have some important questions to answer with that. We don't really know whether the antibodies we are measuring are actually the antibodies that give you resistance. And it's not going to take a long time to answer that question. You know, I expect the answer will come in a matter of a month or two. But right now, if we do that test and they have positive antibodies, we can't really tell them what it means. And we certainly cannot assure them that it's safe for them to expose themselves to coronavirus.
Great. Go ahead, Sheila.
I just have a follow-up. I'm still unclear about how many folks we can take care of at the fairgrounds. I heard you say 32 hotel rooms, but what's the capacity at the fairgrounds that you've got?
I'm afraid I don't know what that is. Willie would certainly
know. Willie
know?
Is Willie on?
Willie's on as a caller.
Yeah.
But 80. Go ahead, Willie.
Hey, everyone. This is Willie. And the capacity at the fairgrounds, we actually have quite a bit of capacity just because we're only using one of the currently three available buildings. And so we don't know the absolute maximum capacity between all three. But as it stands right now, the one building, actually OLECAP is going to be using, the capacity is going to be about 50 individuals. Although 30 of those will be taken up once they move from the hotel setting. So about 20 additional at the fairgrounds or so, plus the 32 at the hotel.
And the capacity to add additional space at the fairgrounds, Sheila.
Exactly. So two more buildings, and plus I should add that there's 25 spaces for RVs right outside as well. And I believe 5 to 10 right now are being used, so another 10 to 15 there.
Thank you, Willie. Anybody ask questions?
Greg, this is Carolyn. I just wanted to let you know that since the opening of this meeting, there have been up to 28 other callers. I have a feeling that some of those might be staff and they might have questions. But to do so, I'd have to unmute all of them and then staff would have to identify themselves. Is that something you wish to do?
No. Why don't we find a way to have them send a note if they're muted? Can you use public comments email where you are?
That would be Philip.
Can we ask the other electeds who aren't on the video, which is most of the city council, if they have any questions?
Oh, yes.
This is David Faber. I don't have any questions, but I figure I'd just be the first one to pop in here. So thank you.
And just to follow up, as we wait for, we'll give another chance for any electeds on the phone. But Philip, can you check the public comments email? If we have staff, can they email publiccomments@co.jefferson.wa.us to indicate?
Yeah.
Indicate the question directly or what caller they are so we can unmute.
Greg, they wouldn't know which caller they were. If there was staff on the line, I would have to unmute everyone to find what staff was wanting a question answered.
If staff has a question, email the question. Email the question to comments. Yes. Go ahead, Casey.
Another question is about the timing. I heard Kate state that 7 counties have already submitted their waivers, and I guess I'm curious as to, Tom, what you think the appropriate timeline is for us. Obviously, I think there are people in the community who are hoping that if we're going to get some kind of waiver, requests that would be done as soon as possible. So I'm just wondering what you project as the ideal timeline.
Well, this is one of the reasons for the meeting tonight that, you know, ultimately it's for the respective, well, really the Board of Health and the Board of Commissioners are the decisive groups. There's several mandatory steps to the process. So at a minimum, we have to have a Board of Health meeting and a Board of County Commissioners meeting. And so, as you know, the next Board of Health meeting is scheduled for the third Thursday of the month. You know, you could do a emergency meeting sooner than that. So it's really for the board to make that those timelines. We're initially, and my recommendation, this is an important decision for the community. And, you know, although there are certainly people who would like to move very rapidly, I've heard from a lot of people who have the opposite perspective and feel that they're gravely concerned that anything that would incentivize tourism to Port Townsend would would expose the whole community to an increase in unacceptable risk. So I think that there's a lot of people that want to be heard in this process, and I think it's important to remember that the list of phase two activities is not an all or nothing list by any means, and not all activities on that list have the same impact on tourism. So that's actually the next agenda item, is to talk about that. But in terms of the timeline, you know, you can move as rapidly or as deliberately, as you would like. But I know a lot of people would like to be heard. A lot of people would like to voice their perspective in this process. And we're accumulating letters for the Board of Health because we're receiving, you know, at least 10 a day.
So Greg, I have a question. So I'm don't want to veer into discussion here, but we are the most vulnerable to tourism. We're the most vulnerable because of who we are and where we are compared to the 7 other counties, or in fact the 9 other counties that were on the list with us. And so that's one thing to consider. But my question is, in reading everything that I've read, the guidance for the 12 business sectors isn't even going to be finished until May 15th. So is that not, at least we couldn't reopen until, if the variants went through and everybody was in agreement and we went down this road, we still have to wait for the state committees to come up with the guidance, and we have to be sure that the businesses have those implemented prior to opening. Is that not correct, Tom?
That is correct. That is pretty explicit in the governor's plan.
So you could put in your application. Where did Case go? He's off the screen. You can put in the application now, but at minimum, we have to get to May 15th or when those business sectors' guidance papers are completed. And we have to check the businesses to be sure that they're measuring up to those guidance, the health and safety procedures. So today is the 8th. 7th, 8th, something like that. I mean, there is still a week at least before that information is even ready. And then we have to go to the next step, was to check the businesses to see if they're abiding by the guidance. So we have some time yet.
Yes. And this is kind of the next agenda item is an opportunity for us to discuss this, but I do want to take... I see Pam, but let's give the phone electeds one more chance. Are there any more sort of clarifying questions about this before we go into a conversation about, you know, what really is necessary for Jefferson County in relation to these others? Pam, do you have clarifying questions?
I was probably going to be jumping into the considerations for reopening safely, so I'll wait until we finish that agenda item, and then I'll make a comment.
Thank you. Anyone on the phone or staff that have clarifying questions?
And I've checked, this is Philip, I've checked the email, and there are no staff comments or come in there.
Thank you, Philip. All right, well, thank you guys for a lot of information to process. It's interesting, and I guess for the considerations, we'll move on to considerations for reopening safely, and I'm sure that we've all received, you only get 10 emails a day, it's not very much that public health is getting. So I'm not sure exactly how we're going to manage this, but I do want to make sure that we hear all the electeds.
Greg, if I may, I'd suggest that you might want to allow Dr. Locke to lead off and talk about, because ultimately it will be a recommendation of the public health officer to the Board of Health, which then will take action and then move that on to the county commissioners. So, Dr. Locke, while you're open to hearing for further considerations, what kind of approach do you foresee?
I'll certainly tell you how I would approach it. As you know, the health officer is given three options in terms of the recommendation. One of the recommendations could be not to seek a variance, which the Board of Health could choose not to accept, in which case we would, potentially look at other options. The other is to go for a full variance, so to allow all of the things on the phase two list. And then the third option is to pick and choose. And I as I looked over this list, the lens I look through it with is really kind of a traditional medical approach, and that is measuring benefit against risk. That's how we typically make decisions, especially in circumstances where there's high uncertainty. And the coronavirus pandemic has some of the highest uncertainty of any situation I have ever faced. This is a brand new infection. We're learning things about it day by day, and there's still a great deal we don't know. And the things on the list and what the risks for each one is, we do not precisely know. This is unknown territory we are moving into as a state, and we do not have precise studies on any of these activities in terms of what the risk is. So it's very high uncertainty, and in those situations, you typically ask yourself, what are the benefits, both to the economic benefits and individual benefits and community benefits, and then what are the risks? And in terms of this particular area, first and foremost, the risk you look at is the risk of increased coronavirus transmission and more cases locally. And then the second risk you look at is what is the risk of incentivizing people moving from high prevalence areas to low prevalence areas? I don't think anyone in Jefferson County is really anti-tourism. It's anything we do to incentivize travel from areas where this infection is still circulating to a significant degree to an area where it's currently being suppressed runs the risk that we will lose the ground that we have, the very costly progress that we have made over the last 2 months. And then the final consideration, as you look at the different things, you ask yourself which ones can be done and preserve the kind of social distancing, the physical distancing criteria that we want to maintain, which ones will be easy to do that with, and which ones will be very difficult. And so how this looks as you go down the list, the things that are in the high benefit, low risk category are things like manufacturing and new construction, maritime industries, where they've already worked out a lot of the details about how you can screen workers at the beginning of each day and have hand washing facilities and wear masks when appropriate and keep people physically separated. So those are low-risk activities. They have high economic benefit, and they're actually very unlikely to encourage tourism. It's just reviving local businesses that have been closed. Some of the in-home services, house cleaning, some of the professional services that are office-based, likewise may fall into that kind of higher benefit, lower risk group. And then down at the other end of the spectrum, where you're really looking at things that may promote travel and tourism, are things like allowing camping overnight camping and recreational facilities, opening restaurants, opening hair salons and nail salons, expand real estate is open to some degree, but expanding it in a way that encourages a lot of out of town travel. And the problem there, the danger from a risk standpoint is not so much is that Jefferson County would be doing it before anyone else around here. So it's, if all the restaurants in Western Washington opened at the same time, there would not be the same kind of incentive to come here than if Jefferson County had the only restaurants open in this region. Now that, as we all know, people are getting quarantine fever. They're very tired of the kind of the isolation and restrictions of liberty that they're under. And the reports we're getting from downtown Port Townsend is, even though it's a violation of the governor's order at this stage, they're still seeing people from out of county come just to enjoy a sunny day. I think those are the activities that the higher risk ones at the bottom of the list that without more evidence to say that we could do that safely at this point, those are things that I would be disinclined to recommend at this point. And so you know, we still need to hear from more people. We still need more information. But where this is shaping up, at least for my recommendations, is that to seriously consider the high benefit, low risk, but to seriously consider waiting until the rest of the state and the region opens up for these others, which is not going to be that long in the future. And it's going to be much safer if, for instance, restaurants open up in a whole region at once. Now, that being said, I really do support organized efforts to encourage the greater use of takeout and keep our restaurants alive. That's my message to the public is, you know, if you want those restaurants to be here when this is all over, you have to support them now and through this entire process.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Locke. And I feel like I've pontificated on this a lot. I'd really like to hear from the, maybe invert the order here and start with the Board of Health and hear your thoughts and questions. And then we can start with you, Pam, but I want to... actually, let's start with the phone callers first, and just because I don't know if we have any. I guess all the Board of Health is on the call, so go ahead, Ben.
A very sage friend of mine has given me this quote, which I think is appropriate. The urgency of any situation is quickly forgotten, but the mistakes are long remembered. And so I'm very, very... hoping that this will be a deliberative process, like Dr. Locke said, and that we take our time that's needed in order to make the right decision for us at the moment. And things can change. I read at the bottom of this information that you handed out before the meeting, that yes, we can ask for a specific variance first, but then as things change, we can also submit a new variance. So it is an ongoing process, and it isn't set in stone. So for myself, trying to make decisions that affect so many people that I love and care about, I'm also going to be looking at the low risk, high value, and I'm going to be looking at all 12 of those sections and trying to determine the risks and the benefits. I think that in the information that we received, again, there's some really good criteria for looking at each one of those 12 sections and trying to weigh each one of them by the risk of disease spread during business activities, also by sort of trying to determine or the number of people who could be infected during business activity for each one of those 12 sections. And then, of course, the economic and individual benefits for opening that activity. So that's how I'm going to be looking at this, and then, of course, taking in all the information from Dr. Locke and all the science that's involved with this entire pandemic. And I'm hoping that I can consult with council and with the city manager, and also I'm hoping that we can set up an easy way to hear from the public, maybe not just emails, but might even be another way, a survey or something else. So if we have a couple of weeks before we start to really talk about it at the Board of Health, perhaps we could do some online survey so we can get as much public input as possible by the time we start to really dig into the details. So that's really all I have to say about it, and so I'll pass to the next person.
Great. Thank you. Dennis, do you have anything to add?
Yes. Thank you. I will just echo what Dr. Locke said in terms of what seems to be his inclination to not incentivize out-of-county visitors. We obviously love visitors. We want to eventually get to a place where they can enjoy the beauty of Port Townsend. But I think that it's not just – in the Washington Post I read, I think it was yesterday – Georgia has opened up, and they're already now receiving 64,000 out-of-state visitors per day. And I just think we have to operate on the assumption that if restaurants open and overnight camping opens, that we're just going to become a magnet for people escaping phase one restrictions to come to a place that doesn't have those restrictions. And it won't just be the restaurants. I mean, I imagine I'm just getting to the point where I'm not totally paranoid going to the food co-op and things like that. I mean, if people are visiting from out of town, they're not just going to be going to restaurants. They're going to be going to the food co-op. They're going to go to QFC and Safeway, you know, to buy supplies and things like that. And I just, it's hard for me to imagine that that's going to be a risk worth taking, given our proximity to King County and, you know, the attractiveness of Port Townsend for, you know, people who can just come and visit for, you know, with an hour and a half drive. So, I mean, I'm strongly disinclined to, I think if we do apply for a variance, it would, you know, it should be a limited one and a wait and see, because King County is very, very close to us. And so.
Thank you, Dennis. Case, do you have anything to add?
Yes, first of all, I agree with everything that that Pam and Dennis said. I think we do have to be very cautious. I think it'll be a shock when we see how many people come to Fort Worden this coming weekend. This is going to be a very hot and sunny weekend, and my guess is that we are going to see many, many people from out of county. And I'm hoping that we don't see a surge of cases just from that, because, as Dennis said, they're going to do more than just be in Fort Worden. One question that has, well, first of all, just to clarify, I believe we have a meeting scheduled for next week. Is that correct, Tom, for the Board of Health, as opposed to the end of the month? Mm-hmm. I thought I saw an invitation for a meeting for next week, and maybe that's, but we can clarify that later. But one of the questions that has come to me from several people is it possible to open certain activities and have them available just for Jefferson County residents? So is it possible to open a restaurant with reservations only, and we just take reservations from people who are in county. The same thing for a hair salon or something like that. So that's something that people have asked me, and I don't know whether that would be feasible, reasonable, or in any way doable. But that would be a question, I think.
You want to address that, Dr. Luck?
That's really an unknown. I mean, it doesn't sound like it's impossible. I don't know of precedence, and it really comes down to kind of enforcement issues. Something we do know, we have investigated and asked very explicitly, is the state going to take a role in restricting travel? And the answer is no. They're not going to stop people and ask them where they're from and where they're going and demand proof of residency. So anything we did along those lines, we would have to enforce ourselves. Even though this is a state directive, the state is not going to use its enforcement muscle, at least relative to travel between counties.
Thank you. All right, Sheila, anything to add?
I've always been a fan of regional approaches to pretty much everything, just because people are so mobile, and mobility is a huge issue. And, you know, we according to the UW Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, because our state reduced mobility early April, we have 50% fewer cases than we would have. And other states that are allowing increased mobility are seeing a rise in cases. So I'm having a really hard time thinking about the variances. I understand the economic issues. I'm very sensitive to them. And I'm sure this is going to be a very difficult discussion, and I'm definitely going to be part of it. But I have to tell you, I came here in 1971 with a boat builder. And I spent my first seven years here around boat shops. And boats tend to have very small spaces. You cannot stay 6 feet apart. So I would hope that the maritime industry could create safety measures that would allow them to go forward, but I think it's going to be challenging. I do have a question about whether or not we might, as a local county, create some safe start advisory groups like Governor Inslee had. And there are groups of people that address specific issues. So there's three of the groups. One of them is a public health group, one is economic recovery, and the other is social services support. So regardless of what we do about the variances, I'm hoping that we can be proactive locally. So that's pretty much.
All right, Sheila, thanks. And I will say that many of those activities are starting. There is an economic revitalization group that's already begun. You know, and there's social service, you know, a lot of the social service agencies already have had to come together to help modify each other's services. So those things are happening, you know, with Olympic Community of Health and everything, but excellent. All right, well, let's move on to the city council and maybe the people we haven't heard from. Ariel, Steve, or Amy, do you have anything to add?
This is Ariel. I have a question. I heard today that maybe Clallam is thinking of applying for a variance, and I'm curious if that would have any impact or if Dr. Locke has any information about whether our neighboring counties are thinking of applying for a variance. And I also just have a second question is, when the Board of Health, if they are going to deliberate on this issue and have a meeting later in the month, is that going to be broadcast to the public so that people can listen in real time? Thank you. Those are my two questions right now.
I think the answer to the second part is yes. You know, we're still in virtual mode for the Board of Health, so it will be on this same platform, and will be recorded, so people can view it at other times as well. On the first question, I do know that the our representatives from this area, Senator Van de Wijk and representatives Theringer and Chapman have asked the state, have formally asked the state to include Clallam. And the only reason that Clallam is not on the list is that they've actually had lower activity than Jefferson, but they had three cases in a small cluster about 2 weeks ago. And these were cases that were clearly identified as arising from a contact in King County. So someone who had been infected there and then came back to the county. So they actually have a pretty strong case. They're under the 75,000 population size, which is the cap for this, and they really percentage wise have lower activity than we do. They've had a total of 19 cases in Clallam County, and the impact that does have some impact. It would reduce the, you know, the camping, restaurant. There would be more places for people to go on the Olympic Peninsula than just in Jefferson County. So it's a factor, but it's hard to predict. It would also encourage even more people to come through Jefferson County on their way to Clallam County. So it's hard to quantitate.
Thank you.
Great. Amy, do you have any questions or anything to add?
I do. So Dr. Locke touched briefly on enforcement issues for people coming in from out of county, but we haven't really talked about any of the consequences of the fact that people in county are going stir crazy and that they are also worried about the economic impact and are doing things like opening up against the orders. Are there any... I don't understand if there are ways that this is being enforced now, or if there are steps that we can take, or other ways that we can help keep our community safe and understand why they're being asked to do that at this time. So I guess the question is, can you speak a little bit to the enforcement issues and consequences of ignoring the orders?
Would you like me to tackle that? this is a tough one because even though this is a governor's order with criminal penalties, the push has really been to try to incentivize people to do things voluntarily. But there are ways to enforce it. Our easiest enforcement situations are when it's a licensed activity. So if it's a restaurant, for instance, that has a local license. We can take decisive action on that. Some things like hair salons and, there is licensing involved with those. It's state licensing. But someone who is open in violation of a governor's emergency order and who has a state license is putting that state license in jeopardy. Those kind of things. But we start with what we call in public health compliance-based enforcement as opposed to punitive enforcement. We don't want to punish people into doing the right thing. We want to convince them what the right thing is and then have them do that. But once we exhaust that, once we're convinced compliance-based enforcement doesn't work, then punishment, punitive measures have a role to play. And it's always case by case. It's hard to make generalizations for, a uniform enforcement policy because, fortunately, the compliance with the governor's order has been extraordinary. That's why we have zero cases in Jefferson County in the last 4 weeks, is the citizens of Jefferson County have done an extraordinary job in physical distancing and staying at home and and decreasing transmission. So the voluntary part works, and it's really gotten us to where we are. But we have to grapple with the, you know, for that very small minority that wants to defy the common good and the, you know, a lawful order, you know, ultimately we have to take action.
Thank you, Dr. Luck.
All right, Monica, anything to add? Questions? Still there, Monica? We can come back to you. Owen, any questions or comments?
Yeah. First of all, I appreciate the work of the Board of Health and Dr. Vock and everybody on this call. This is, as I know several of you have said, this is some of the hardest work we were ever called on to do. In particular, the delineation of the low-risk activities versus the high-risk activities, and particularly the high-risk activities where the risk is attracting visitors from King County, from other counties with higher population. I do very much appreciate the idea of holding off on opening those activities until we can have a regional or even statewide advancing into phase two. That said, if there is some mechanism by which we could have like recreational facilities or restaurants or some of those kinds of activities open to county residents, I would appreciate being able to explore that. And the only other comment, and this may be a question actually to the Board of Health, is that it sounds like the next meeting is not for 2 weeks, and you know, the guidelines for the business sectors might be available as soon as the 15th, next Friday. So possibly if you would be able to meet and have some discussion earlier than 2 weeks, I think that would be appreciated by a lot of people in the county. So, thank you.
Thank you, Owen. Monica, one more chance. Are you still with us? Yes. One more chance. I'll give you another one.
It's Monica.
Hi.
Hey, I finally found the unmute button. I just actually have a comment after all the information we were sent today and this meeting. And I am pleased that all of the elected and the Board of Health have made the effort to get all this information out to us and to our community. And those listening on KPTC, this was a great education tonight, and I am hoping it helps our community members understand, no matter where they stand, whether they want to open again or they don't, I think it will really help for them to understand everything that has to be dealt with to make that decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Monica. David, do you have anything to add or questions?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Just a couple quick things. One is I really appreciate a lot of the comments from the Board of Health. I thought Pam's comments from the beginning were fantastic regarding kind of the way that we should be looking at this. In terms of opening up for county-specific use or county resident use, I think we need to be very careful with that kind of approach. There could be some pretty significant constitutional issues at play there. You know, without perfect information, that sort of approach could have the result of drawing too narrow a circle around our community and having people who do reside here but don't have established social groups or so forth would be excluded from that if they can't be identified effectively or if they don't. I mean, that seems like it's a serious can of worms to me, in other words. So I would be hesitant to support anything that would attempt to create a locals-only approach to opening here. Instead, I think having an approach that just doesn't quickly rush to open things that could attract people who are not locals is probably a smarter approach. That's all I have to say. At this point in time, I have no clarifying questions. So thank you.
Thank you, David. Michelle, anything to add?
You're muted.
You're muted, Michelle.
I said, coming on the heels of David's comments, it's kind of interesting because my comment was going to be, I was sent a article today by a constituent who has emailed me before, texted me before about the concerns of the fort and about North Beach Park, which I hear about on a every weekend. But she sent an article from Madison, Connecticut, that when they are reopening, they did a locals only for their parks and trails, you know, that kind of approach. So you had a variety of ways to show that you were a local resident. And so just to let you know, because I heard Dr. Locke say, I haven't heard of anybody doing that, but there are examples out there. And I just want to say, I'm not necessarily for that. I mean, you know, it's such a complex issue. I understand how hard we've worked. We've done a good job to maintain the social distancing we needed and obey or comply with the governor's orders. But, you know, I have some neighbors whose kids are from San Francisco and it's a second home, and they're here. And I was very concerned when the first one came and then the second one, you know, and it's kind of nerve-wracking to know that they're flying in from San Francisco to sort of hang out at my neighbor's house. But I also understand in speaking with the parents that they live in a small, tiny apartment. They had a roommate that wasn't complying with the stay-at-home order. They wanted to get out. They felt unsafe. And so people are thinking. I think we have to have some compassion as well as protecting our community. But there are people that want to get away because they are coming from a place that doesn't have the natural beauty, the open space, the shorelines, etc. So I'm trying to make sure that we aren't unfairly pitting locals against non-locals, and it is a concern to me. So I would just say I agree that trying to measure the risk-benefit is definitely the way to go. And it's a difficult decision. If we're the only one on the west side here to have all of this natural beauty and, you know, tourism, tourist attraction, we're going to get it. I was at a stop sign on Kearney and I guess that would be right near the golf course. I was walking. There was 18 cars at the stop sign backed up at 4 o'clock. 18 cars. I don't know, you know, everybody's sort of loosening up. And that's without the phase two. So I've really seen the difference in downtown and in the traffic, and it's already happening. So just good luck, health board, Sheila and Case and everyone. And thank you for doing your work.
Can I just say one thing, Dr. Michelle? I'm not in favor of creating two classes of people, first off. But if we decide to go that way, I would want to consult with the sheriff, police department, and the county prosecutor, because I think it could turn into. I would want them all to give input on what they thought.
Yeah.
And I would just say, you know, in my mind, from an epidemiologic standpoint.
Hold on. Michelle, can you mute again? Sorry.
I will. Thank you.
I'm not really looking at this as local versus non-local. It's really high prevalence versus low prevalence. So if someone was visiting here from Forks, even Clallam County or Mason County, it's a different thing. You know, they're coming from a low prevalence area to a low prevalence area, and would not have a likely impact. So I think it's important that we, when we talk about this, that we not slip into that, you know, residents versus non-residents. It's really about that risk of moving infection around the state, that this whole stay home, stay healthy initiative is about. It's to discourage travel, not because people don't have a right to be wherever they want to be, but because it stirs up the pot infection transmission-wise.
Great, thank you. David, questions, comments?
Well, the whole issue of the guidance not being out till the 15th was one of my concerns too. I know we've got a lot of people that have been working on their sectors, their businesses, trying to think, how can I do this safely? How can I increase, you know, my openness in my business? And when can I do that? It is unfortunate, and the 15th wasn't a guaranteed day either. So I think probably in time for people to review that guidance, coming out hopefully on the 15th or even sooner, but also digesting it, applying it to their sector, and getting back to us with input for the Board of Health, we're probably going to be to the 21st by then, because that's only six more days. So I think, you know, we need to take a regional approach, and that's what I'll be looking for. And really assuring that we're safe and keeping the gains that we've made so far. I can certainly see some of the low-risk ones that Dr. Locke mentioned. Doesn't seem like a big stretch to go from doing existing construction to new construction. It seems like it's a lot of the same things that they'd be doing. So I'm open to those kind of ideas, but I think we really need to think of ourselves as a region. When you talk about local food, you talk about within 100 miles. Well, that's on the other side of Seattle now, so that's a problem for us. So I think we need to be cognizant of that and keep monitoring this.
Great. Thank you, David. Kate?
Yeah, thanks everyone. This has been really fascinating. You know, I'm sure that all of our heads have been filled with these questions since Friday, and it's great to hear more perspective. I think one of the most profound moments I had was reading this weekend in the New York Times the article about Sweden's choice not to go into lockdown, and one of the health ministers said that the part of the reason they chose that route is because coming out of lockdown is so hard. And I have no idea, but, you know, now that we're in this position, it's like, of course, we know we have to come out at some point. We know people are afraid. We know we're in the oldest county. How do we do this? We know we're near a major metropolitan area and that we are very attractive. How do we do it? And yet we know we have to at some point. So I am legitimately and atypically totally undecided on this, and appreciate the deliberative process that I'll get to go through with all of you, and look forward to expanding it to more of the public, to more of the business owners, to our other elected bodies. I do want to say that I am deeply concerned and feel in many ways that I represent working people who are impacted by this more than the elderly population of the community, who, you know, people who don't have pensions, don't have retirement funds, don't own homes, have service industry jobs that have been disproportionately impacted by this. And we have focused really hard in the Board of Health and in this community on the social determinants of health. And I want to be really explicit that this is impacting people with less resources and of younger generations more than it is older generations. And I think we really owe it to our constituents to balance those impacts also. So as much as I am a fan of the precautionary principle, I think that from another public health perspective, we owe it to our constituents to be taking a close look and saying, are there ways that we can safely and responsibly allow some more economic activity? Because we know who that's hurting the most. And I'm also compelled by the idea that we could be a model of doing this right. And knowing that the entire country is struggling with this, the fact that we have done social isolation or distancing so well, the fact that we have contained infection, the fact that we have had such high compliance with social distancing, we might be just the right community to show that we can do this well. And I totally appreciate the legal concerns about this, but I think part of that probably is saying, okay, we're willing to offer some more freedoms, and with that comes some added responsibility, personal responsibility, and potentially restrictions. I'd be very interested in thinking about how we can institutionalize wearing masks in public. I'd be interested in seeing how we could message at least strong discouraging, if not mandating, a local's only approach to certain services, not because I want the two classes of people, but because I think that sends a strong deterring message to other areas. So I'm not advocating for it. What I am asking for is that we seek more information on what our authorities are, what are the possibilities, what are the unintended consequences to explore further. So really interested in the process that we outline moving forward. In terms of the timing, given that we are at least two governmental or quasi-governmental boards, I don't think we are going to risk moving ahead of the May 15th guideline or guidance that would be coming from the governor's office. So, you know, I really see today as an opportunity for a red light, green light. We want to proceed. Do we want to task all of the great staff that we have here to be bringing more information to us? Do we want to hold a public hearing to be getting more input? Who else do we need to be hearing from? That's where I'm interested in heading, is kind of what is the process by which we decide to move forward or not.